Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Francesca Spector, author of Alonement, How to Be Alone and Absolutely Own It. Welcome to a one-off mini-series of the Alonement podcast, produced in collaboration with the Marmalade Trust, hosts of the annual Loneliness Awareness Week, which this year runs from Monday the 14th to Friday the 18th of June. In this special series, I'll be interviewing three key figures who are exploring what it means to be lonely. While previous seasons of this podcast have focused on the whole spectrum of being alone, including alonement, which means positive solitude, this mini-series focuses specifically on the experience of loneliness and the expert solutions that can help us feel less lonely. Before we kick off with the episode, I want to share a little more about the Marmalade Trust's latest We Get Lonely campaign, which is built around an important double meaning. We get lonely. That's a fact. And the more of us who acknowledge our own loneliness, the better, because that's how we find support and solutions. Loneliness can happen to all of us, regardless of our age, life stage, or background. Take it from me. I wrote the book on how to be alone, and yet I still get lonely sometimes too. There's another meaning though. We get, or we understand, loneliness. This campaign is about learning to understand the experience of loneliness, how it might affect yourself and others. Because as scary as it might seem, it's only through identifying and acknowledging what loneliness looks like that you can begin to navigate your way out of it. I hope you get a whole lot of positive takeaway from listening to these episodes. We know that loneliness can be devastating, with weighty effects on sufferers' physical and mental health. So let's take it seriously, because together, through awareness, honesty, and understanding, we can help ourselves and others to feel less lonely and much more connected. This episode's guest is Sunday Times best-selling author Cheryl Rickman. Cheryl's book, Navigating Loneliness, How to Connect with Yourself and Others, is an insightful, comprehensive handbook to finding the balance between solitude and loneliness through cultivating the most meaningful, fulfilling relationship possible with yourself and with others. Cheryl is a woman after my own heart. As you might suspect from the title of her book, her anti-loneliness toolkit is just as much about time alone, connecting with yourself, as it is time with others. This was such a fascinating and refreshing conversation. Cheryl talks inspirationally about the purpose of reframing loneliness, not as something to be scared of or to stigmatize, but actually as a useful evolutionary signal that points us towards making positive changes in our lives. Cheryl also shares her personal experience of loneliness, how she initially learned to love time alone as an only child, yet her relationship with alone time changed when she tragically lost her mother as a teenager, and she had to develop stronger, more meaningful connections elsewhere. I am so grateful for Cheryl's nuggets of wisdom in this podcast, and I'm sure you will find so much practical takeaway in what she has to say. Cheryl Rickman, welcome to the Alone Mum podcast. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Francesca.
Oh, bless you. Well, I've been reading your new book, Navigating Loneliness, which we're currently in the first week of publication, aren't we? So really exciting time. And it sounds like we have a lot in common in how we approach the issue of being alone, because a lot of your book, you know, as well as obviously being called Navigating Loneliness, seems to be about positive solitude as well and how to cultivate that. So, yeah, I mean, I was really intrigued to see effectively half of the advice in your book is about being alone with yourself. And that's really intriguing, because I think quite often we think of loneliness, the loneliness cure, as being other people.
Yeah. And I think that's a key, really, is learning to be content in your own company and getting to know yourself and accept yourself is so vital. It's almost like the first step to navigating your way out of loneliness, I think, and being able to enjoy your own company and sort of really get to know what triggers you, what you like to do, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, all of those kind of things. Getting to know yourself is a pathway, really, to getting to know other people on a deeper level, I think. And we're so busy at the moment, you know, even you know, a lot of the time in lockdown, there's this sense of busyness that you don't really get that much time necessarily to spend in your own company. And I think it is very important to kind of rethink how we see alone time, which is something that you're obviously doing great work in already. And it sort of leads to, the better you know yourself, the better you can get to know others and connect with others, I think. Mm. And the right people, find the right people for you, which is really important when it comes to quality over quantity, I think, when it comes to relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm interested to know, you know, obviously, you know, loneliness is in the title of your book, and it's what, you know, it's what this whole mini series of alonement is about, specifically that feeling of loneliness as distinct from alone time. But, you know, I've asked every guest on this mini series what their take is. But when I say the word loneliness to you, what does that mean specifically? What does, you know, what image does that conjure up?
I think it's such a subjective thing that it's, you know, you can live alone or be alone, and it doesn't necessarily mean you're lonely, just as you could be surrounded by people and be more alone than, even though you're not physically alone, you can feel lonely. So kind of the image that you might think of someone being by themselves actually doesn't necessarily mean you're lonely. So I think there's that, I mean, you've probably heard this many times before, but there's that whole thing, is it May Sarton says, loneliness is a poverty of self and solitude is the richness of self. So yeah, it's very much that lonely is kind of like when you haven't chosen to be by yourself or alone, or it's not a choice, whereas solitude kind of is, and that's what the positive solitude side of things come from. So I think that's really kind of the key. You can choose alone time and savor solitude and get that solace, and it could be a really delightful experience, whereas that's only actually if your innate need to connect has been satisfied. So I think if you feel like you belong and you have a good, even just one or two really solid connections of supportive relationships, when you've got that, being alone maybe doesn't feel so scary because you've got that connection. Or if you've got a really good sense of self and connection with yourself. Whereas if you don't have that, then you could be surrounded by people and have a really big family and lots of friends. But if you don't have that connection, then you can feel lonely. So I think it is a really kind of grey area, but it's that sense of not feeling heard and seen and feeling disconnected from other people or from yourself, I think. Mm.
Loneliness is a poverty of self. I have never heard that before. And I think it's really intriguing. So what does that phrase specifically, that idea of poverty, is that that being with yourself is in itself a state of poverty, or how does that work?
Yeah, I think, the other side of it is that solitude is a richness of self. So there was another guy, who said, what was it? There's the glory of being alone, which is solitude, whereas loneliness is the pain of being alone. So I think pain and poverty, it's sort of like it's lacking. So I think loneliness is about a lack of something, so a lack of connection, whereas solitude isn't about a lack of anything, because you've got the choice to be alone and enjoy the solace of solitude. And loneliness can be kind of like, whereas solitude can be rejuvenating and restorative, I guess. Loneliness is more kind of, can have a destructive sort of side to it. So I think there's a real big difference between the two.
Yeah, I think that there's that loneliness is it, you know, loneliness is a really horrible experience, but it is also quite, I think, interesting as an emotion, because it is so uniquely destructive. And I think that you can, you know, and I know this from my own experiences, you know, if I'm alone and that's a lonely time, if, you know, say in lockdown, for instance, when there wasn't much of a choice and many of us did experience loneliness, it's almost like you don't feel like you can meaningfully move forward in that aloneness. Whereas, you know, I know that positive solitude, you know, what I have coined as alonement, that time feels incredibly exciting, that there is, it's almost, you know, how, you know, I have so much to do in this time, it seems so ripe and full of opportunity. And I think it's so interesting how effectively, you know, the same objective state can be felt in quite different ways.
Yeah, it really is fascinating, because it's kind of like that, the way you described it then, Francesca, was kind of like, it's enriching to be, have the solitude. Whereas you kind of, loneliness is something where you kind of feel stuck in. And it can just feel like this place where you sort of want to climb out of this hole, almost depression and sort of other sort of parts of mental health. You kind of can feel sort of stuck and that you want to escape from this feeling of loneliness, whereas solitude, like you say, it's a more welcoming and enriching time period. And I think the thing is, I think too much solitude, say, for example, if you have a lot of solitude and then you're like, okay, I'm ready now to connect with other people, but you can't for whatever reason, I think that's when it can become loneliness. So it's a tricky one, but it's one of those things where it is a normal, natural part of being human. But yeah, there is a kind of taboo to these things, which I think we're all trying to kind of combat that and talk more about it.
And if it's normal and natural, being lonely in itself, do you think that, you know, from your exploration of this topic, do you think there are any, I don't know, I'm hesitant to say positives, but do you think it's, you know, it's kind of necessary that we feel lonely sometimes so that we know what company is, I suppose?
I think so. I think that's that whole sort of, it's important, I think, with anything, to have the balance. I think if you have balance, then you can, you know, if you're feeling lonely, then when you are feeling connected, whether that's to yourself and to other people, you do notice. You're absolutely right there. It's that, it almost like if you, it's that whole without the rain, there'd be no rainbows thing. If you didn't have the negative side, you perhaps wouldn't appreciate the positive side so much. You know, and I think it's this thing where to understand loneliness, there needs to be this acceptance of it. And you know, everybody, I think one of the things I learned while I was researching the book is, I think, you know, the majority of people have or will at some point in their life had experienced some form level of loneliness, whether it's just fleeting, very quick, or something that they feel often. It's such a common emotion or sort of feeling, and so I think there needs to be that acceptance so that people can ask for help when they need it. I think that's the key.
Yes. And what was it that inspired you personally to write a book about loneliness?
Yeah, well, I was commissioned to write the book just the very before lockdown started. So from that side of things, it was, loneliness was at epidemic proportions before there was a pandemic, but obviously it's increased. But personally, I was an only child, and contrary to popular belief or the kind of generally belief, I never really felt lonely as a child. In some ways, I'm not sure if it did, but I think it perhaps helped me develop a sort of relationship with myself and acceptance and enjoy my own company. So partly I wanted to tap into my own experience of positive solitude and alonement, as you say, as you coined that side of things. I wanted to sort of tap into that positive side of solitude to help other people kind of reframe how they saw that. Because so I just really sort of wanted to explore that, and then and cultivate that, help people cultivate the ability of being alone without being lonely, because I think that's sort of really key. And that sort of then led on to, okay, how do you navigate your way out of loneliness and connect better with yourself, and then connect better with other people? So I think, as I mentioned, I think it's getting to know yourself and really sort of spending time with yourself helps you kind of just know yourself better, so that you're better able to go out into the world and connect better with other people. So I sort of wanted to split the book into two parts, or three parts, actually, because it's how to connect with yourself, and then how to connect with the right people. So through that knowledge of self-awareness, who are your people in your tribe, the people who will see and hear you best. But then also, once you've sort of established that, actually learning to connect on a deep level with those people. So, you know, listening skills and how to respond well, and noticing your own patterns of response, and sort of using them to connect well with other people, and sort of all of those sorts of things, and exploring all the resources that are out there to help people as well. Long answer, but yeah, it was really my experience as an only child to help people enjoy their own company, I think was the key.
Yeah. And at what periods of your life do you recall being lonely as distinct from alone?
I think, and I literally hadn't really thought about it until I started to write this book, but the loneliest period of my own life would have been when I lost my mum. It was during a time when you're surrounded by people. So I was 17, that's when you're in a social whirlwind, and you're at college, or, you know, just going out all the time. So I was with people all the time. I had a boyfriend, I had a great group of friends, my dad. And yet actually having lost that, you know, the first connection that you ever have, and when we were, you know, had a close relationship, I had gone off the rails already a little bit, like you know people do as teenagers, at sort of going out partying a lot, but I kind of upped that a little bit, and I was sort of kind of almost sort of self-medicating, and it was interesting because obviously a lot of it was grief, but then there was a sense of loneliness, of nobody understands, nobody else has been through that, feeling on your own and having to cope with something so big. So I think that experience has helped me have a sense of empathy when writing the book, to tap into that experience of loss and a lack of connection, despite being surrounded by people. So despite not being alone at all, really, during those years, I was surrounded by people and yet lonely. That's helped me. And then also, like I said, the being an only child and yet enjoying my own company. Of course, up until that point, I was able to do that. But then I think when something sort of major, really heartbreaking happens in your life, that can sort of trigger, you're not going to enjoy your own company as much because you're grieving. So I think that was the one time that I really felt that loneliness. And since then, I've been very lucky to kind of build relationships with people who really, I feel, see and hear me and encourage me and sort of fill the gap, I guess, that's left when my mum passed away. So it's helped me really try and find the right people, perhaps more than maybe I would have had my mum still been there, maybe. So yeah.
I'm so sorry to hear that you lost your mum at such a young age as well. What a horrible thing to happen. It's interesting that you sort of, it's only in writing this book, I suppose, that you reflected on how lonely that was.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's interesting because obviously you just think, oh, that's grief. You label, you know, that was grief. It went through all those sort of things. But actually, looking back on that time, yes, just partying and doing all the social things that you do as a teenager anyway, that sadly a lot of teenagers haven't been able to do with in the past year, sort of partying harder than perhaps I would have, and then actually just feeling that sense of lost connection that was magnified, I suppose. Yeah,
that's interesting what you said about sort of to compensate fostering those really close relationships with others. And I like how you talk about that. You say, you know, I feel seen, I feel heard in those relationships, because of course we know it is about the quality of those relationships to prevent you from being lonely. It's about having those quality relationships. It intrigues me that you said that you had almost cultivated, almost like overfilled that gap, not overfilled because that implies it's negative, but you'd almost created sort of even more connection as a result of that loneliness, that it was almost an opportunity towards that, those connections.
Yeah, I think it made me aware. I mean, at the time, I think it was just a sort of social whirlwind and you just connect with people and they're not necessarily the right people for you. And that often happens as the teenage years, you connect with loads of different people. But I think what it's done is, as I've grown, I've really tuned into who I really relate well to. And for example, now the people I feel who I've got the best and the deepest connections with are really people who are the encouragers and sort of very kind people. And I don't know, they have certain qualities perhaps that my mum had. And I've sort of perhaps not knowingly sought that, but reflecting on that, I can see that it is those connections that that I kind of savour and cherish the most as a result of loss. So I think, yeah, sometimes I've definitely learned that loss and lack can be a catalyst for real abundance and sort of a really positive connections. And I think now I've got some really solid connections. Perhaps I maybe wouldn't have found had I not experienced that loss. And there's definitely always this sense of strength from adversity. I think a lot of people who've been through any kind of adversity.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're always stronger than you think you were or would be. And then when you come through the other side, you can realize that it's made you more appreciative, or it's had a really positive effect in many ways, despite the challenging side of that sort of thing.
Completely. And I think that hopefully is a very positive, inspiring message for some of the people listening to this, because I suppose it comes back to that idea, that sort of dichotomy of poverty and richness that we were speaking about earlier, finding richness out of poverty, finding connection out of sort of having that, gaping lack of it. I think it's a hopeful thing, and it's very important to have hope, I think.
Definitely.
In loneliness.
Mm. Yeah, and I think as well, if you're feeling lonely, or if you've experienced an adversity in your life, it can be something that you, when you look back at the time, it can be a terribly painful thing. But when you look back, it does remind you of your strengths, and you can reflect on that. And actually, being in solitude and having that time to yourself to reflect, you can notice, and you can sort of, in the book there's a few exercises about actually looking at what you've been through and how you navigated your way out of that, and things you've achieved and overcome, and then looking back and thinking, actually I needed a lot of persistence for that, or actually, gosh, I am more resilient than I thought I was. And in getting to know yourself, you start to recognize these values and these strengths that you weren't really aware of, and probably and might never have realized you had, had you not had that time in solitude. So
yes,
yeah,
it's nice to think that you're suffering through anything or any overcoming discomfort, it's nice to think about what you can get from that experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're recording this ahead of Loneliness Awareness Week, when it will be released. And Loneliness Awareness Week, which is hosted by the Marmalade Trust, who are backing this podcast mini series, their theme for this Loneliness Awareness Week is We Get Lonely. I really like the idea of that, because it speaks to that acknowledgement, that idea of owning up to loneliness, which, you know, as we know, can be a very stigmatized emotion. What would be your advice for talking about loneliness, for being able to say, I get lonely, we get lonely?
Yeah, I think it's brilliant that the Marmalade Trust have chosen this topic, because I think understanding loneliness and accepting it is so crucial. And obviously, you know, part of what it means to be human is kind of accepting the full spectrum of human emotion. And, you know, life's hard enough without giving ourselves the pressure of not feeling, ever feeling lonely and never feeling sad. What's happened is loneliness has become kind of like a taboo thing. So you don't want to kind of admit to being lonely, because, you know, you don't want to be popular and you want everybody to like you. And does loneliness mean that you're not popular? And actually, it doesn't have anything to do with that. But I think what's happened is there's been a culture of what I found really interesting in researching this book is we tend to kind of experience of solitude and being by yourself are often associated with something negative. So, for example, say you've been naughty as a child and you're banished to your room and off you go by yourself, or off you go to the naughty step. And actually, rather than say, you know, look, you just go and have some time to reflect, you know, and then that perhaps would be a more positive thing. So you have time out, and solitary confinement is obviously, you know, a punishment in prisons and so on. So we've kind of been conditioned, I guess, to see alone time as bad time, you know. So I think what needs to happen is there's a little bit in a book that I could read about this to kind of reframe how we see loneliness, so that we don't see it as just taboo, and then we're more open to talking about it and saying, yeah, I'm feeling lonely, and going and asking for help. And so we do what the Marmalade Trust is suggesting, saying, yeah, I get lonely. So yeah, I raise my hand, I get lonely, but also I get, as in I understand and accept it. And I think the way to do it is to see loneliness as a signal. So basically being really useful. So it's kind of almost like, yeah, brilliant. It kind of can be a positive thing. So in the book I've got here, I say, as evolutionary scientists have been saying for years, loneliness, like hunger and thirst, has developed as an adaptive cue to drive us towards doing whatever is necessary to reproduce and survive as a species, to connect socially with each other. So in the evolutionary context, disconnection was sort of life-threatening, as early humans were heavily disadvantaged when they were isolated, which led loneliness to evolve as a warning sign, call to action to reconnect and thus survive. Viewing loneliness from this evolutionary perspective can shift things. We don't feel shameful when we say I'm hungry or I'm thirsty, but we might when we say I'm lonely. Yet loneliness, like hunger and thirst, is simply a feeling that flags up when we are deficient in the nutrients of connection. So in this way, we can reframe loneliness as a helpful warning sign, which can then guide us into taking tiny steps towards what we need for our survival and towards connection. We can then see loneliness not as something to be ashamed of or embarrassed about, but as an evolutionary prod guiding us towards finding something that is missing. And yeah, I think that's a really important way. So it's like hunger or thirst. It's just, I'm thirsty for connection. I'm hungry for a chat, or And seeing it in that way, I think, can potentially remove some of the stigma, and also realizing that how many people actually feel lonely sometimes can make you feel not alone in being lonely, which is important as well.
I love that. I love that. So yeah, as a signal, as something that is, you know, not stigmatized and negative as we see it, but yeah, something as natural as hunger or thirst. And I think, you know, I hope that to people listening to this, then that it, you know, that it automatically offers that feeling that it's okay, that it's it can be spoken about in a way that is just something to be accepted, something neutral.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think it's that acceptance, and acceptance comes up a lot, I think, when you're talking about loneliness, because it's partly the acceptance of it being a natural feeling, and like we say, like hunger and thirst, but also developing self-acceptance, because when you spend time alone, you get to look at your sort of people tend to beat themselves up and give themselves a hard time, and the inner critic pipes up, and I think that's why perhaps sometimes people don't want to be alone, because they're concerned about, you know, in their own company they might not be very nice to themselves, and actually trying to work on your own self-acceptance is a real gift, because the more you accept yourself, the more time you get to do that and do the work of self-acceptance, the better you show up in the world and the better you're able to connect with people and have the kind of confidence in yourself to go up to somebody and talk to them, and sort of it's recognizing your sort of strengths and weaknesses and accepting and sort of having compassion for yourself. Being alone gives you the chance to do that.
Totally. I mean, you know, a couple of things come out of that for me. So I think, firstly, I think it's so interesting that you mentioned the idea of alone as punishment. Because you're so right, you know, from the very earliest years of our childhood, when I suppose not the earliest, because you can't really leave a baby alone, but you know, from, you know, being sent to your room when you were a young child to to, you know, being in prison, solitary confinement, that being the ultimate punishment. And you know, I wondered as you were saying that, do you think that we almost, because we're so used to associating aloneness with punishment, do you think we almost begin to punish ourselves when we're alone?
Yes, I think so. I think that ties in with that sort of self-criticism and so on. But also what's interesting is, conversely, we reward the togetherness. So, for example, you know, your goal is to meet somebody and settle down and have children and start a family, and that's the kind of, and so that's sort of celebrated. And conversely to being by yourself, and then I think if you're sent off to your room and, you know, banished to your room to go and just be by yourself, or it is seen as a punishment during that time, you're kind of, if you are reflecting and thinking, oh gosh, yes, I've been naughty and that's why I'm sat here on my own, then perhaps that does feed into, when you are on your own, you list all the things that you think are wrong with you, and you start cultivating these stories which often are not true, and are actually, that's a whole other story, but based on external kind of validation and actually other people's own stories that we sort of adapt as our own. I do think that probably does happen. And I think that's why it's important to really consciously think about what you're doing when you're alone, and how you spend your time, and what your thought processes are, which is important.
Yeah, so it's that process. I talk about this a bit in my book as well, and I think it's that idea. I call them solitude skills, those skills to be alone positively. But you know, I wonder if we could just shortcut this for everyone. And I don't know, you know, alternative. Perhaps we need an alternative parenting philosophy, which involves, you know, sending the naughty kid to be with their great aunt Marjorie for half an hour every time they're naughty and punishing them with togetherness.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yes. The one going to be their not so favourite aunt or something. But yeah, I think. But also maybe giving them, sort of sending them, even if they were on their own, just the language, perhaps sort of let's go and reflect, not necessarily on what you've done wrong, but you know, let's just have some quiet time to just, you know, to kind of refuel and just sort of and try and sort of what the benefits of solitude are. Actually saying, look, you can go and sort of be with people, or if you are going to be on yourself and you think that is the way to punish a child, then perhaps there would be some benefits in it for them as well. And actually, sort of focusing on those as well, to get that balance.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. And I like what you said earlier as well about the idea of accepting the full spectrum of emotions, and accepting that loneliness can be part of that. Because, you know, it seems that we, for instance, you know, we're a society that quite often pursues happiness, and that, you know, that's something that we're all sort of fighting for. You know, how can you be more happy? I don't know, there's almost a relief in accepting that something can be lonely and not sort of imposing too much on what that might mean, just knowing it's a sort of natural part of your day or your week and whoever you are.
Yeah, I think that is one of the biggest the biggest ways towards well-being is this acceptance, permission to be human. So giving yourself permission to be human and accept all of the different the whole spectrum of emotion. It's so important to and freeing to just go, yeah, I feel really low today, or I feel lonely today, and that means I'm lacking in connection. So is there anything I can do tomorrow to give me a bit of whatever I'm missing, whatever nutrients I'm lacking, and whether if that's connecting with somebody or myself, you know, what do I need to do to really help with that?
That idea of, I suppose, yeah, that idea of accepting those low, well, I mean, I don't even want to call them low, accepting those more difficult emotions like loneliness. But also, you know, I think that it comes back to that notion of turning a poverty into a richness, I think is really interesting. And I think that, again, it's that idea that, I suppose it's that acknowledging that is the first step, right? Because if you don't acknowledge that you are feeling a lack, if you don't acknowledge you're feeling unhappy or loneliness, then you don't even get it doesn't even become the sort of jumping off point, the opportunity it could be to turn it around.
You're absolutely right there. And I think that's probably why one of the psychologists often say that one of the best things you can do when you're feeling whether it's sad or angry or guilty or jealous or lonely, whenever you're feeling these things, if you just take the time to label how you're feeling and acknowledge that feeling, label it and say, I'm feeling angry or I'm feeling lonely, literally just voicing it has been shown in various research that it kind of helps take the sting off it and almost dilutes the feeling just by literally labeling it. And then it also helps you move through it. And by expressing that feeling, which is why it's so important to talk to somebody if you're feeling lonely, by expressing the feeling, you are not repressing or suppressing it anymore, you know, and suppression of emotions can lead to depression, and it's always better to express those emotions, whatever they are, and especially if they're a negative emotion, you know, those emotions that are challenging. Acknowledgement of those feelings, and label them, and then be able to to talk to somebody, or if you really feel like, I just can't talk to anybody about this, journaling and writing it down and just getting it out is another way of expressing the emotion.
Absolutely.
Really important.
Definitely speaking to the alonement philosophy there as well, because journaling is a huge thing. I think it's, you know, I think it's one of the most key solitude skills to start with, and just such a mentally healthy thing to do. And you know, I think our conversation, it's almost, I've always thought of, you know, the idea of even, you know, the Loneliness Awareness Week that this podcast mini series is to mark. I've always thought of loneliness awareness as being a sort of sense of, you know, oh, look, there's loneliness elsewhere in society, and we all need to be aware of that. But actually, I didn't know there's a whole new meaning. It's bringing awareness to your own loneliness can be a positive force, which is really interesting. You know, awareness takes on a whole new resonance as a personal thing.
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting, just hearing you say that, Ben, is I think with any negative feeling, they are all signals, aren't they? They kind of, you know, if you're feeling lonely, then that is signaling that you're deficient in the nutrient of connection. Mm-hmm. And if you're feeling, you know, really disappointed, say, that's flagging up as a signal that you might need to make some changes in your life that makes you feel more fulfilled. The whole spectrum of emotions, sort of down the lower end, they are useful signals. And I think if we start to see them as that, rather than, oh no, you're feeling that way, that's terrible, or there's something wrong with you, actually no, that's being human, permission to be human, and actually it's useful as a signal. It can help you make some changes and navigate your way out of loneliness or any other emotion that you're feeling in that way. So
back to the title of your book, Navigating Loneliness. And I love that. You know, next time I feel lonely, I'm just going to envision a big neon sign, you know, pointing me towards more connection, and perhaps, you know, people listening to this might want to do the same, because I think it's a very, you know, that it's a much more optimistic take on loneliness. I think
and it's not to belittle, you know, how painful and difficult loneliness can feel, but I think with any difficult feeling, it's really important to have that sense of hope, and like you mentioned earlier, to know that there is a way out and this too shall pass, you know, because it does. People who've experienced all kinds of tragic events and real hardships have found their way out of it, and loneliness is no different in that sense. There is always a way out.
Wow. And that's such a positive message. And, you know, I'm looking at the clock. We're rapidly running out of time, which is a shame, because I could talk to you for hours. But I wanted to finish off by asking you, you know, simply, there are so many positive, useful tips and exercises in your book about navigating your way away from loneliness. But if you could give one simple daily practice that helps you navigate out of loneliness, what would that be?
I think being happy to sit with your own thoughts and perhaps daydream. I know it sounds like a strange thing to, oh, how is that gonna combat loneliness? But I think so Terry Waite, who I interviewed for my book, and he wrote the foreword very kindly, and obviously people will likely know that he spent 5 years in solitary confinement as a hostage, and didn't know if he was going to get out alive. And, you know, it really gives a sort of sense of perspective to that social isolation. But he says that during those years of isolation, he would travel in his head. So he would just sit there and daydream and imagine, you know, far off lands and different things that he wanted to do. And I think just sitting with yourself, something that we do as children that we often don't have time to do as grown-ups, is just sitting with yourself and daydreaming and visualizing yourself in a place where you're not lonely. And you're surrounded by the kind of people that you really want to be surrounded by, and just kind of letting your imagination take you to where you want to be and visualizing, I guess. And then when you kind of sort of stop daydreaming and carry on with your day, it's always like thinking, kind of plotting a bit of a route to help you get there. And it just opens up the idea of, okay, maybe I could go and volunteer, or perhaps if I just pick up the phone to that person that I really got on with, and, you know, what's the worst that can happen, you know, that they don't want to speak to me, but at least I tried. Or daydreaming and visualizing what you want life to be like in and not lonely, just opens the doors. And it also floods you with a bit of positive emotion, which actually helps your brain function better. So it sort of opens up the problem solving side of your brain, and it just opens you up to possibilities. And then as you go about your day, you can try and plot a map to make that happen. So yeah, daydreaming.
I think that's a really beautiful practice, and to deal with that all too common natural signal that is loneliness. I think that's a really wonderful route to connection. So thank you so much, Cheryl. I'm so appreciative of you coming on this podcast. I hope you enjoyed listening to this special one-off mini-series of Alone Month for Loneliness Awareness Week, produced in collaboration with the Marmalade Trust. To find out more about the Marmalade Trust, visit marmaladetrust.org. Follow their work on Instagram at marmalade_trust and on Twitter at marmaladetrust, all one word. You can keep up with all things Alonement on Instagram at AlonementOfficial. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts to hear more. And of course, sharing is caring. So please do go ahead and share this episode with a friend or loved one that you think might benefit. Thank you so much for tuning in, and stay connected to others and to yourself.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.